So we begin this week with an apology for last week, which was bad. We are currently using two new microphones that we probably should have bought 2 years ago.
I was just thinking about that. How much money we've spent on cheap equipment that we can't use, and we gradually just keep buying less cheap equipment. But yeah,
similarly to bikes, you can't really get around spending money on this. You know, like those cheap mics were bad, and I'm hoping these are a lot better.
And like one died and made all the scratchy noises, and we kept trying to be really careful with it, and then got another mic to replace it. Then the other mic started making the scratchy noises, and so hopefully this
is better. Hopefully this is audible chocolate. Probably not, but a lot of stuff to go over, and this is Dan's really excited. I know you're excited about everyone, but this is when you're really excited about you've been putting some thought into. Really quick, run over some news. Starting off with World Cup. Nino Schurter winning World Cup still is...
That's amazing. That's
crazy,
so awesome.
Crazy cool. You know,
truly the best of all time.
He is without a doubt the greatest mountain biker of all time. Yes. I think you'd be... I mean, there's some others that are kind of, you know, there's the Rachel Athertons and stuff who are in the kind of stratosphere. You'd be hard-pressed to make a numbers argument that he isn't. Which is super cool. I think his eighth win at Val d'Isol. Pauline Ferrand-Prévot coming back for a huge win at the World Cup there on the women's side, announcing, by the way, that she will be leaving Ineos to sign for Visma Lisa Bike, and that she will be making a full-time return to the road. So that's another interesting development there.
How old is she?
She's gonna be early to mid-30s. I thought she's
older than that. But...
No, because she was really young, like... Yeah, she's probably early 30s. I remember her as an under 23 when I first got into this. So
okay.
I think she's kind of getting to that point that a lot of cyclists get to in their career where, like, you know that you're maybe just beyond your best years, or that, like, you know, I think that most pro cyclists aren't finding their best form at 35 plus. So you see some interesting career decisions there. Bjorn Riley, American, taking the short track win, which was really cool. You know, America going undefeated in the short track is sweet. Local news, closer to home, we had Xander competing at Marathon Nats. Huge performance there.
Yeah, Bravo. I think he got like seventh or something, which is super cool.
Tearing it up, man. Lots of Maybird kids need to be proud of their coach right now. Super, super cool from Xander. I have to shout out Riker, one of my boys. And Kyson, and maybe a couple others, but I know for sure those guys have been doing the Crit series.
I know, and I've been seeing them on Instagram, and it just looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It looks super fun, so.
Yeah, what really quick on Riker. Riker sent me an interesting article about some of the safety innovations they're making at the Tour. They're thinking about introducing a yellow card system, similar to cycling, some kind of like...
Similar to soccer.
Similar to soccer. It's been a long day. I just finished a long day of work. I want to do a little bit more reading on that and maybe explore it in greater depth, because I think that is interesting. I want to get back to doing more road stuff on this.
Oh, and that'd speaking of Montagues, Ken Montague sent me a really cool question about standing versus sitting.
Ooh, okay.
And I wanted to answer it really quick, but I think it's one that might be fun to spend a little more time on. So that...
To come.
Yeah.
More to come. I think I maybe rushed prematurely, I'm realizing, because there was a couple rides... in the near future that we're do we have on the calendar yet?
Well, so Brady, we're Mabers. Well, I'm wanting to do what I'm super excited about, and I'm calling it the Stupid Ride Series. And
which the CCP2P was kind of the inaugural running of.
Maybe the Bajio ride was probably the first stupid ride of the Stupid Ride Series. Okay. You know, epicish rides are good at good workouts. They're good.
Maybe distinguish really quick, like epicish versus stupid ride.
Okay, so epicish rides are usually around 3 or 4 hours. It's good endurance training. It'll make you a faster rider. The stupid rides are like events, you know, kind of a big deal that you'll be tired coming out of it. And it's not necessarily going to help your training, but it's cool if you can accomplish. And
it's more like, I've checked this box, I've done this thing.
Yeah.
It's an event versus a training.
Yeah.
Okay.
So... So Brady, our next stop in the Stupid Ride Series, Brady's got a route he's planning that's going to basically have trails that go all the way around Jordanelle.
Oh, really?
But all on trail. But it's going to involve, like, it's really creative. It's going to involve, like, Dutch fields. It's going to involve like coyote trails. It's going to involve
like Midway Heber stuff.
Yeah. It's a lot of Midway Heber stuff. Like trails a lot of people don't normally ride.
I've ridden Dutch trails once. I've ridden coyote a handful of times. There's other trails in that area. I didn't even really know. Yeah, like going around the lake.
Yeah. And Brady knows some pretty dang obscure trails that I guarantee you or I don't know of. He's
interesting.
He's on the pulse of Park City trails better than just about anyone ever.
And this is over into the stupid ride.
Yeah, this is definitely, I think it's going to be like.
Like, what are the stats on this?
Like, I want to say around 80 miles. And it's huge. What? Yeah, it's nuts. So, I don't advise anyone to do it. But it would be rad if you did.
That's a crazy line to walk. And I think this is maybe a good opportunity to say, because that thinking of that area and the weather we're having, this will be hot, probably good, maybe kind of borderline good point to point kind of run. Like if you were thinking about like you're doing point to point or Leadville or something like that, like use these to test your nutrition, use these to make sure you're hydrating enough.
Usually on these, we'll plan in water stops and places to stop.
Cause you can't carry it. Cause I was gonna say it'll probably be upwards of 85 degrees, I would assume.
Yeah.
Right. And these are pretty, I'm thinking of the areas around Jordanelle. A lot of that's like very exposed, right?
I believe so, but some of it's really pretty and shady, and yeah, I think it's going to be a cool ride.
That'd be really cool. I
think tentatively we're talking maybe the 29th of this month, but.
And I'll throw out, because you can't make it.
I can't make it.
I'm off work.
Okay.
I will go.
Yeah.
I volunteer my future self, creating a problem for future me. Cause I've got point to point coming up, and I need to maybe have, I'd rather try and fail at this and kind of learn from that.
You know. Missed CCP2P, so.
That sucked. I really wanted to finish that because I felt like I definitely could have. But I'll look forward to that.
And then July 6th, I'm planning the next one.
Oh, do we have any indication what that is yet? Or is that like a secret?
I can't. Yeah, I don't want to tell people yet.
Because I have one. Have I pitched my
Cottonwood
Horchata? That's that I want to. Okay. We'll consider that. I'll put a pin in that for later. One. Okay. So. Let me plan one.
And then probably another thing I want to throw out there is the Richfield I Cups this weekend. I love the Richfield I Cup. That course it's just super fun to ride.
Still haven't been out to Richfield.
Yeah. There's really good riding out in Richfield. The course isn't like the most scenic.
Right.
But it's really, really fast and flows really, really nicely.
It's like it's a good course, right?
Good, like really good course.
The view maybe isn't.
And the whole, you will, if you do the Richfield I-Cup, you will have ridden the entire NICA course.
Okay.
The I-Cup course is longer. It's got an extra loop added to it.
So it's the NICA course plus.
Yeah. So I would, yeah, if you're in a division that's doing the Richfield course this year.
Oh my gosh, go do that.
Yeah.
Not just having pre-ridden, but having raced a course
it makes a huge difference.
I do so much better on courses I've raced before. There's just no way around that. You know, like the St. George courses, I know, like even Soldier Hollow, that I've only probably raced 4 or 5 times, I still know. Like I would much rather do Soldier Hollow, even compared to another course that might suit me better. Like if you care at all about your NICA season, this is the one to do.
Yeah.
Like there's no reason, like skip another one, do this one. But, and also just a plug for I-Cups being awesome too. Like we do that at the beginning of the season all the time.
Have you heard the I-Cups are all now USAC sanctioned?
All of them. Cool.
Yeah. And I think the main reason they're doing that is for insurance.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of why we're USAC affiliated, isn't it?
That's the main reason.
That's kind of why we care.
You'll get some USAC points from doing I-Cups. It might make it a little more expensive. I'm not sure.
I kind of hope not. I was going to say, cause that's an affordable way to get some USAC points. I was going to say, cause I think I-Cup races are reasonably priced for what they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yep. That's all.
Oh, there's that cool endurance midweek. I forget.
Oh, like
that'd be cool.
I can't make it to
that. I've got a competing thing going that night, but like we should get some Maybird kids out there. That'll be just a wicked fun event. It's on their Instagram. You can look at the dates. I remember looking and regretting that I can't do it because I wanted to do it with maybe my brother. But that's another one that I thought maybe people should consider doing.
Yeah, that sounds super fun.
Aside from that, I think we're good to go.
And if anyone did anything cool and we neglected to shout you out, please let us know.
Yeah, yeah. Just text us. Let us know. Because again, the team's big.
So I can feel bad about it for a week and then.
Yes. And then forget again and then do it 2 weeks later when you forgot about it. Yeah. Send stuff our way. But, so this episode, you initially told me this was kind of like an episode about carbs, but then it's kind of an episode about hydration. And this is interesting to me because I have this product that I ended up with for free at work that I want to ask you about that I've used a couple times. We've done a couple of nutrition adjacent sort of episodes lately. Like have you nailed down like what is this actually about?
Well, today's episode is primarily about hydration.
Okay.
But I kind of like when we had our fueling episode last week, I kind of missed an elephant in the room and I didn't really address like fueling via high carb sports drinks.
Right.
You know, which have gained a lot of popularity lately.
They've exploded because there's like the scratch stuff, that like the black bag of scratch that I got a free bag of at work, where you can get 100 grams of carbohydrates in a water bottle.
It's crazy. And we'll kind of get into that, but it's primarily about hydration, but we're going to talk about like combining your fueling and hydration into one bottle. Basically, we'll talk about that in the end, and be sure to listen to the whole entire thing so you can really, I'll really summarize everything at the end, but I think there's a lot of information leading up to there that's super important. But yeah, mostly we're talking about the hydration portion of fueling basically today. And I mentioned time and time again that fueling our rides properly is easily one of the fastest ways to get faster. And I just want to reemphasize some things that we discussed last week. And one of them is that like for events that are shorter than 90 minutes, our glycogen stores are the most important thing.
So what you eat before is more important than what you eat during.
During or right or the morning of or something, you know. So
yeah.
So for Nike racers, for iCup racers, being kind of stocked up a day or two leading up to your event is way more important than whether or not you can eat a sis on the start line or have a sis every lap or something.
Which you should still try to do.
Yeah, there's still good reasons to do that. But on shorter races, coming stocked up and topped off is the priority.
Like worst case scenario for those is you have a stomach bug for the 2 days before and you just can't eat anything for 2 days, can't eat anything the morning.
That would
be
terrible.
That's worst case scenario, right? Even if you feel better that morning and you can eat during the race, right? That like you're what you've done leading up to it, which is part of your race prep, right? Okay.
Yeah. So just coming stocked up is probably the most important thing.
Right.
And for those that have trouble eating a sis at the start line or eating breakfast that morning, not the end of the world. As long as the day before you were really like eating your pasta and your potatoes and your rice and all that
Didn't do that, might kind of be the end of the world.
Yeah. But also, you know, I do recommend trying to have a sis at the start line, try to take something in every lap or at least have a drink that's got some carbs in it. At least something's going to make you so keeps your blood sugar maintained. It's going to help you recover quicker, help you get ready for the next race quicker.
You'll feel better. Yeah.
Your RPE will be lower, you know. So learning how to eat during a race is an important skill and it comes easier for some people than others.
Skill you have to work on. Yeah. Something you should practice.
But one thing that Alan Lim, who I think Alan Lim is probably easily one of the best minds in sports science ever.
Yeah, he's good. He's an interesting guy. I've met him twice.
Fascinating guy, but he's probably one, I don't think many people have met a smarter human being than Alan Lim.
He's one of those people where he's like very secure in the fact that he's like, you know, most rooms he sits in, he's the smartest guy in the room. And just some of the answers he'd give to really basic questions. I remember because like, this is a backcountry and a lot of people who were asking him questions were like not super tuned into training people. Just like his ability, like that's the mark of a smart person is they can explain something complicated in a really intuitive way.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I know the Scratch brand, like not all their stuff's cheap, but it's, you know, not sponsored here.
Yeah,
like it's very good stuff.
Really good science behind it. And
it works.
We'll talk a little bit more about that. But one thing he pointed out is that In races less than 90 minutes, hydration is way more important than carbohydrate intake.
Okay, yeah.
Which I don't disagree with.
Because like we were saying, you could get like you could get through the Nike race without taking a gel. Getting through the Nike race without drinking would be a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, and you think about it too, like I can't remember exactly, but like it seems like you can go like months or years or whatever without eating. Probably not years, but
yeah. Well, no, that's a thing. That's a thing. Like be like really extremely really, really obese fat people. There have been cases where you can live, or like you and I could probably last a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Right.
But we could probably only last a couple of days without hydration.
Yeah.
So hydration, that's what we're talking about today. Super, super important topic. And, again, it's one of those topics that's like a really easy way to get faster. And if you're not doing it properly, you're leaving some performance on the table for sure. So as you've probably all heard, our bodies are about roughly 60% water, right?
I heard 70%.
Okay. I said 60 roughly. 70.
Oh, okay. Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. That's always what I hear like on Bill Nye growing up.
Yeah. Nobody add up these numbers I'm about to present. So
yeah, go boil yourself or something. See how long you take to evaporate.
So of that water, of our, we'll say 60% water, of that water, about 70% of that water is bound within our cells.
Okay.
Okay. Another 20% of that water, it lives in the space between our cells.
Okay.
Okay. And then roughly about 8% of the water in our body is found in our blood plasma.
Okay.
Which that number doesn't seem very high.
No, it doesn't. Because like blood is a liquid.
Yeah.
Right? Like you'd think it would have to be higher than that.
Well, no, that's a percentage of our total body water.
Oh, okay.
So out of all the water in our body,
still that feels low.
It feels kind of low, you know. So it's surprising how much water is in our cells and in the space between our cells. And, you know, you'd think we all have a lot of blood in us. That would be where most of the water is, but it's not really the case. So, an interesting thing to point out is that muscle contains a lot more water than fat. Fat hardly contains any water. Mm-hmm. But muscle contains a lot of water. So
to say muscle's heavier than fat.
Yeah. So right. if you're muscular, you know, your flates, your what did I just say?
Your flates? What was that supposed to be?
I don't know what it's supposed to be. If you're really muscular, your weight, I was going to say weight fluctuates, but
your flate fluctuates.
Some
flate fluctuations.
So if you're really, really muscular, your weight's going to fluctuate a lot more than someone that's got a really high fat percentage. So at least that's
so my weight fluctuates more than yours. Okay.
So
I need to add a laugh track again. I did that once and people thought it was funny, but I haven't like been bothered to go find that little MP3 file for the laugh track again.
Don't you have a rim shot button you could push?
I think I do. I forget which one it is. It's one of them though.
Okay. Well, we never deserve it. So
yeah, I was going to say that would be, I'd overuse it if I remember where it is. So we're not going to open that Pandora's box.
So hydration, it's a little bit controversial. There's a lot of different opinions on it. You're going to hear a lot of different, some will say things are myths and other things people won't, you know. The biggest controversy I would say is whether or not it affects your performance.
Okay.
There's a lot of people out there saying that, you know, doing an event slightly dehydrated won't affect your performance at all.
Really?
I've even heard people say that it can improve your performance because it improves your watts per kilo.
Okay, I'm really quick. I want to come out on record saying that sounds extremely dumb. And I hope that's not the side you're on because that sounds like a really ridiculous way to use air coming out of your mouth. Like, wow.
There's a theory out there that, which might be partly true, that the biggest effect of dehydration is actually from this thirst sensation itself rather than anything it's doing to your body.
What?
So
I'm sorry.
Which could be true, slightly true. I mean, when, you know, if you're uncomfortable, you might not perform as well.
I can't get over the watts per kilo thing, because by that logic, like cutting off my arm also improves my watts per kilo, because my arm's pretty heavy and I don't use it to pedal.
That's our next episode.
Oh, okay.
Like which body parts aren't necessary. And...
which ones should you sell for S-Works, for like an S-Works, right?
Yeah, like which body parts aren't arrow.
Which kidney should you cut out for like optimal weight distribution?
Yes. So there's, you know, and then we'll talk a little more about the high carb sports drinks and so forth later. But typically it's generally accepted that most people can lose about 2% of their body weight through dehydration before it greatly affects their performance. And there's an asterisk right there.
Sure.
Big asterisk right there. Some people have been able to lose like 6-8%. I can, Joe's doing some math right now.
I'm bad at math. So really quick for me,
that's a lot of weight.
That's the 3 to 4 pounds of water is a lot. I guess water's heavy, but that's still... Well,
that's 3 pounds if you weigh 100 pounds. So it's like 6 pounds.
Well, I was saying for the 2% that you can lose under, like normally without, you said that is without having a significant impact on your performance. And so upwards of that, that's quite a lot of water.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. But again, there's an asterisk and we'll talk about that.
Sure.
Some people have been able to lose more than that and still perform well. And there's a lot of studies out there that are going to say that it doesn't matter. And there's a lot of studies out there that say it does matter.
Welcome to sports science.
And, really there is a reason, and really it affects some people more than others is kind of what it comes down to.
Okay.
Like some people, hydration, like they can perform well, slightly dehydrated. Other people, it greatly affects their performance.
Is that like a body type thing or an adaptation thing? Or is it like a random, just like me and Andrew could have a totally different reaction to that, even though we're very similar riders with similar backgrounds? Or I know that's kind of a left field question, but
yeah, and we're actually going to really address why it affects some people and not others. And
I'm jumping the gun.
You're jumping the gun just a little bit, but that's okay.
I'm chomping at the bit, man. I was going to say biting at the bit, but that's not it. That's close.
So we're going to address why hydration might be a bigger deal for one person rather than another person. But, so first of all, like when we say hydration, what does that really refer to? Like,
I think most people think it's just water, like drinking water. That they all said in high school health class that if your pee is yellow, you're dehydrated and you need to drink more water. And this is actually a thing the biggest thing I remember from my thing with Alan Lim was he said, when you sweat, you're not just sweating water. It was like the best way I was able to understand the pitch behind why you should spend money to put mix in your water when like you really like, oh, we evolved to just drink water, you shouldn't need to do that, right? That like there's a performance reason for that. Mm-hmm. Right, jumping the gun again, I'm sorry.
No, it's good.
Lots of gun jumping here.
Yeah, so but when I ask the question, what is like what are we actually trying to hydrate, like are we trying to hydrate, because I remember I said like 80% of the water in our body is bound in our cells. And then like, what was it? 20% is in the space between, and then 8% is the plasma. When we're talking about hydrating, are we talking about like hydrating our cells, hydrating the space between the cells,
I guess
hydrating our plasma, or like all three?
Intuitively, I just imagine that it kind of comes out of all three of those buckets at a similar rate. But the other thing is like, it was when we start talking about losing water, that's not just from sweating. That's also from breathing. Like when you breathe out, there's a lot of moisture that you're losing there too, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Like if you've ever read the Dune books, like that's big right now. That's a really interesting part of Dune, is like the special suits that they wear that recycle all your body's water, because you can't lose any water on the desert planet, right? That like you don't just lose water by sweating when you're running up a hill and working hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd imagine it kind of comes out of all three of those buckets and replenishes at a similar rate, or is that not true?
It ultimately is, because it all runs together and balances out, and we'll talk about how it does that. But
sure,
as far as sports performance goes, it's definitely the blood plasma.
Really?
That we're trying to keep hydrated.
The smallest bucket.
Yeah.
By some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, like if that bucket depletes, that's when you'll notice the biggest performance decline, rather than if some of those cells like lose some water, you know, if those cells lose water, you're really not going to notice a whole lot of like.
But blood plasma is something you've talked about before, that like increasing your blood plasma volume. Mm-hmm. I should know this. I was in the podcast where we talked about it. Like that's a huge performance. That's like a, that's an actual tangible thing that you're trying to improve with your training, but that kind of like starts to, it's like becomes sand in your fingers as soon as you start sweating, because that volume is only going to go down. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So let's understand why blood plasma is so important. Well, it is for a lot of things, but one of the main things is it's basically our almost like our radiator fluid, our coolant that runs through our body. You know,
right.
Kind of like in an engine, like in a car engine. I don't know anything about mechanics, but you have like a radiator that kind of cools the water, and then you have these tubes that go through your engine. And
right, the engine's creating a ton of heat. Or like big computers will do this too. Like computer servers get really, really hot, so they run like water through, because water.
Yeah, they have like these tubes of water that goes through. The water picks up the heat,
right,
and it takes the heat out somewhere. And then it'll cool down the hot water and send it back through, send the cool water back through, and it'll pick up the heat.
It's basically taking energy and moving it away from the system whose performance is going to be decreased by the presence of that heat. Right. Yeah. Okay.
And that's exactly what blood does. It goes deep into our bodies and it picks up the heat. It takes it to the surface of the skin. It exits our body as sweat. And the sweat has an evaporative cooling process. So it's cooling the skin. So the sweat's kind of cooling, like, cooling us from the outside, but the blood is moving heat from the inside to the outside and cooling it. So,
which is why bodies create a huge amount of heat, right? Or like car engines. I was interested in it, like car engines, like one of the like inefficiency of an internal combustion engine is they just produce a ridiculous amount of heat, kind of like your body, yeah, right?
Like our bodies are only like 20% efficient or something. The rest, most of the energy we produce goes to heat, and very little goes to the pedals.
So like the on the front lines, the concern here is that, like, especially for Nike races, you use a hot, you know, you're working really hard, so you'd be sweating anyway. Like if you were doing a Nike race effort in the freezer room at Costco where they store the milk, you're still going to be sweating like crazy, right? Let alone out in St. George or Cedar City in October,
mm-hmm.
right? Sweating a ton, breathing out a ton. There's lots of like water leaving, and the water, especially the water that's coming out of your blood plasma, is just directly taking your performance over time.
But let me point out that being a good sweater is a good adaptation. Like people that can't sweat, they can't regulate their heat. So if you sweat a lot.
Oh, this makes me feel so much better.
That might be a good thing if you sweat a lot. Like people that can't sweat usually can't control their heat very well.
Okay. I was playing soccer on the lawn with some of my cousins who are like in the sort of 2 to 7 range last night. And I was sweating like crazy. And I was like, this, am I like super out of shape? Like, this is really embarrassing. Like, the amount that I'm sweating kicking a soccer ball around my grandma's backyard. Right. So that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Sweating's a good thing as long as it doesn't drip on the ground.
Is that really?
Yeah. Like if you're sweating and it's dripping on the ground, it's not doing you any good. But if it remains on your skin and it soaks your clothing, then it's good.
So sweating on a trainer where it's all coming down my forehead and dripping off my nose, that's not doing me.
Yeah. That's not really
I'm just
doing
losing
good.
Water with no benefit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, so this, our blood plasma cooling system with the evaporative cooling is really, really an awesome thing. I almost said cool thing, but that would have been kind of weird.
Cool, kids. Evaporative cooling is cool.
But and I just have to throw out kind of my hot take on Nike dump bottles.
Here we go.
I know this is so. I'm like probably
buckle up, everyone. Controversy time.
I'm like the only Nike dad that feels this way.
It's the controversy corner.
But really, dump bottles, they'll make you feel better. And I won't argue that. They will make you feel better, but they do absolutely nothing to help control your core body temperature.
Right.
And in fact, sometimes it can actually shut down and inhibit some of your body's natural cooling systems.
Okay.
You know, so
So you're basically saying it's kind of like, at best, it's you're sneezing on a campfire, right? Like you're not like.
Yeah. It makes you feel better. You know, if it makes you feel better, great. But it's not really addressing your internal cooling issues. Hydration, really, like heat adaptation, sweating, hydration are way more important at keeping you cool than your Nika dump bottle.
So question, maybe to illustrate your point, I was climbing Big Cottonwood earlier this week and it was very hot. And because I'm stupid and I have a tiny brain, I brought one water bottle instead of two. And I knew that if I got to like, I'm like, I just, if I get to the top, I'll refill, right? So I'm close to the top, but I have very little water. And I was like, it would feel so nice to dump this water on my head or on my chest right now, right? In that case, it's drink the water, don't dump it, yeah. right? Like, given the choice.
Don't ever dump the water on your head.
Like, yeah.
That's just going to get in your eyes. It's going to make your glasses dirty.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to take away your dump bottles because I know they're precious, but.
But if you had the choice between dumping and drinking, drink.
Usually
focus on getting the water to drink. Like, if you're going to miss a feed, miss the dump bottle, not the water yeah. to drink, right?
Okay. Yeah. Basically. Water asterisks. We'll talk about water in a second.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, so that's plasma. The other thing about plasma too is if your blood volume becomes low, it also is going, it's not just a cooling thing, but it also affects your stroke volume. So your heart's not able to pump as much with each stroke. So it's going to make your heart beat more rapidly. And that's going to increase your rate of perceived exertion if your heart's beating more rapidly.
That makes sense.
You know, and so, yeah, and that basically is going to lower your VO2 max if your blood plasma is low. So you do want to maintain those blood levels. So we'll get to your question. So like, why does dehydration negatively affect some people and other people not so much? And it really all comes down to blood plasma volume. So when it comes to hydration, and we'll kind of discover more why that is as we talk, but when we talk about hydration, there's two really important principles that we need to just understand to make good decisions about our hydration. And the first is about like the transport gates that transport between a semi-permeable membrane. And these are, it's the SGLT1 gate. And so basically for water to move between these semi-permeable surfaces, it requires a key for it to pass through that barrier. And a tiny, tiny bit of either sodium or glucose can allow a whole bunch of water to pass through.
So what's it passing from into?
It's basically passing from the small intestine into the bloodstream.
Okay, so that you're from drinking water in through your mouth, into your guts, and then spreading out from there.
Yeah. But it needs those transporters are basically like a key, and like just a little bit's going to let a lot of water through. But without those keys, it's just going to slosh around in the gut.
Okay.
Super important to realize. And the thing is like, if you're not exercising, you're probably getting enough sodium and glucose in your food that it's going to kind of mix and the water is going to transport and it's not going to sit around there forever. You know, so for just day-to-day life.
Like under normal circumstances, your body's going to do its thing.
Yeah. Water's fine. It'll event. Yeah.
Another reminder, this is not normal circumstances. Like cycling, yeah. Performance cycling is the opposite of normal circumstances for your body.
But if you want like ideal hydration, your hydration has to have these transporters in it, which is glucose and sodium, basically.
Okay.
And you don't need a lot. It's a teeny, teeny, tiny amount. Just a little bit of glucose and a little bit of sodium is going to make it so that water empties your gut quicker than if it was just straight water alone.
Is this part of the reason that you're not supposed to drink distilled water? That like when you go to the store, there's the jugs of drinking water and distilled water, and those are two different things that like...
Yeah, like...
The water we drink isn't just chemically water. There's a lot of stuff in there, right?
Yeah, distilled water, you'd have to add something to it. I mean, it probably wouldn't taste good, but its osmotic pressure would be too low to really... But once it mixes with other things in your gut, it's going to be
kind of fine anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it would transport then, but it wouldn't hydrate you as quickly as if you were drinking a solution that had a tiny bit of sodium and glucose in it.
Which most drinking water does at least have a little bit of sodium in it, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah. I know it's got minerals, which might.
Huh.
But
for sports performance, like this is what glucose was sugar. Right. Yeah. So this is where like Gatorade, right? Like Gatorade was like the first performance beverage that everybody knows, right? Any gas station in the world is going to have Gatorade. Mm-hmm. And people know that like, oh, you drink Gatorade because it has like, I would maybe think intuitively like sugar for energy, but really like part of the reason the sugar's there is to make it so it actually properly hydrates you, right?
Initially, I think Gatorade was a better product than it is now when it was first invented.
Ooh, okay, this
because,
is juicy.
Because at first it just had a little bit of a little bit of sucrose and a little bit of salt. And it didn't taste really good. And so they think they put some artificial sweetener in it.
Because they realized that drinks that taste good make you more money than drinks that work well.
But then later they started adding more and more sugar into it.
Right.
With the priority more of fueling the body rather than...
Sure, yeah.
Rather than hydration, which we'll kind of get into that. Yeah. But when you're talking about just hydration, it's just a little bit of... Just a little bit of... little bit of electrolytes and a little bit of glucose. So that was the first principle of hydration that you should know. You should just know about those transport gates and the keys to kind of unlock the transport gates. So
it
exits your gut quicker, basically, and hydrates you faster.
Okay.
That's the first principle. The second principle is osmotic pressure, which is super important to understand if you really want to make wise hydrating decisions. And basically osmotic pressure, kind of the rule with that is fluids with a low concentration of solids will flow towards solutions with a higher concentration. You know, like for instance, you know, you've got like the Great Salt Lake, you've got like the main part of the Great Salt Lake, which is super salty.
Sure.
You've got Willard Bay, which is fresh water, right?
Okay.
And so if you were to, and there's that little thing that goes between them that separates them. You know, if you were to tear down that barrier all of a sudden, what would happen is all the fresh water in Willard Bay would start moving towards the Great Salt Lake.
So this is like going back to like eighth grade science, like osmosis, mm-hmm. right? Like water moving across the barrier. Like, I don't know if I ever really understood that it's almost like a magnetic thing that like water wants to move towards
a more concentrated.
And eventually the water would all kind of become a similar or the same concentration it over does. Time.
Yeah.
Right. That it, basically water wants to dilute itself.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. And I think just the thing to remember is that the fresh water is going to, or the low concentration is going to move towards the higher concentration.
Okay.
Okay. And yeah, super important. So this is kind of where we talked about like how, you know, we're talking about how dehydration affects some people more than others. It really comes down to if you are a salty sweater.
Okay. So I get on like my black helmet straps, the gross white crusty stuff that's like salt, right? And if you're a curious high schooler, one time you taste it and you're like, oh wow, that is salt, like hypothesis confirmed, right? So like you say salt, or like people who like they've finished the long ride and their jersey's covered in salt, right?
So just looking at your jersey and your helmet straps doesn't necessarily mean you're a salty sweater.
Oh.
Because that salt might have accumulated over a week or two or three.
Ew.
You know, but like if you put on a clean jersey, go on a 2-hour ride and you see salt stains on that, that might indicate that you're a salty sweater. If it happens over a 10-hour ride, maybe not. You know, they really have to test the actual unevaporated solution to really know if you're a salty sweater or not. I think people usually have a good inkling that they are salty versus not. So salty, being a salty sweater versus a not salty sweater is actually what happens is some people have, like, we all have our sweat glands, and a normal person's sweat glands are kind of designed to return as you're sweating. They have these little ports that are designed to return the sodium back into the bloodstream.
Really?
But people that are salty sweaters have a genetic mutation where they don't really have those ports, and so the salt just leaves.
It can only go one direction.
Yeah. And, you know, and this mutation varies a ton between individuals. Like, some people sweat hardly any salt. People with, like, cystic fibrosis sweat basically all their salt.
Really?
And so, yeah. So, you know, everyone's somewhere in that spectrum, you know.
Okay.
So if you're a non-salty sweater, what happens when you sweat is, you know, you're sweating just kind of like, we'll exaggerate a little bit. We'll say you're sweating basically pure water or whatever.
Sure.
Which isn't the case, but
sure.
We'll pretend.
For this illustration.
Yeah. What would happen to your blood is you sweat, your blood would become more salty, right?
Right. There's less water, but the same amount of salt, more salty.
So your blood becomes salty. When your blood becomes salty, it's a salty solution. What's going to happen to the water in your cells?
It's going to come out of your cells into your blood plasma because of the Great Salt Lake effect we just talked about there, right?
Yeah.
The osmotic pressure between the two. Oh, so it's dehydration somewhere is causing dehydration somewhere else, basically?
Kind of, yeah. So basically, you're kind of like, if you're a non-salty sweater, as you sweat the pure water, which doesn't really happen, but as your blood becomes salty, that salty blood is drawing water from your cells into your bloodstream. You're maintaining your blood plasma volume, and your cells, which contain like 80% of your water, which is a lot, are probably going to be just fine to a point.
To a point.
And, you know, and so this is why some people can dehydrate 2 or 3% and be just fine, you know, because they don't lose a whole lot of sodium when they sweat. So their blood becomes more concentrated and it's drawing water from the cells to maintain plasma volume. So they can still continue to perform and continue to cool really well. And so it doesn't affect their performance.
Okay. Now all of a sudden, salty sweater, you're losing a lot of sweat or you're losing a lot of salt as you sweat. Like let's say you're losing almost all of your salt.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happens?
Yeah. So if you're a salty sweater and the sweat you're sweating out is really, really salty, your blood becomes more dilute. And so you've got kind of this dilute blood. The water in your cells isn't going to be drawn to your dilute blood. So the water remains in your cells. And
your blood plasma goes down.
Yeah. Your blood plasma volume just goes down. So then your heart rate's going to increase. Your stroke volume is going to decrease. You're going to lose your ability to cool yourself as well.
Okay, this is cool. This is, I think, one of those rare chances where I've actually had to like understand why your body does anything, that your body doesn't operate by these like mythical rules, that it's like you can, if you're smart enough and you know how it works, you can like connect the dots between you're sweating and you're losing a lot of salt when you sweat. So there's not the osmotic pressure to draw sweat or water out of your cells into your blood plasma. So your blood plasma level goes down, which means that your stroke volume goes down. And when your stroke volume goes down, that means that your heart has to work harder. Your heart has to work harder. That's bad.
And you're
that
overheating
you can,
too.
That you can connect the dots between all of those things.
Yeah.
This is why science is cool. It is really cool.
And that's why really understanding this is super cool too. And
yeah,
you know, and the thing is like people are salty sweaters on a huge spectrum. Some people sweat very little salt at all.
Yeah.
And some people sweat a lot of salt.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, like, sweating is good. If you can sweat, that's really good because you can maintain your temperature better when you're exercising. Being a salty sweater, that's not as good because you're still cooling yourself, but you need to supplement with something.
Yeah.
To be able to maintain your blood plasma levels.
So the ideal athlete would be one who is sweating no salt.
Yeah, sweats a lot, but not a lot of salt.
Sweats a lot. Loses a lot of water, not a lot of salt.
This is just a guess. I'm just kind of making this up, but yeah. I would assume that a lot of the pro Peloton people, a lot of the Keegan Swinsons probably aren't salty sweaters.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I'm a salty sweater.
This all makes sense now. That's if you're just a less salty sweater, Dan, you could have been leading the tour
this
year.
Well, that's not the only thing, but you know, it definitely doesn't help me, but there's a workaround for sure. You know?
Right.
And so this kind of explains why dehydration affects some people more than others, you know. But during exercise, just drinking water isn't ideal, regardless of whether you're a salty sweater or not, because, well, if you're not a salty sweater, it still is good to drink sodium and carbohydrates with your mix. You just wouldn't need very much because that just unlocks those transport gates to transport water out of your small intestine. If you are a salty sweater, and everyone is just a little bit, you know.
Right.
If you are a salty sweater, you're replacing some of the salt that you're losing to help maintain blood plasma volume levels. So really drinking just plain water during hard exercise, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I would really encourage people to at least have some electrolyte and a little bit of glucose in their drink. And if they are a salty sweater, the amount of salt might need to increase. And
so this is where we get to like the practical question. And the parents listening to this are kind of maybe thinking like, oh, great. Another thing I need to be spending money on because my kids shouldn't just be drinking water. Scratch is not particularly cheap. Is Gatorade okay? Is taking a water bottle and putting some tables, like a bit of salt and a bit of sugar out of your pantry into the bottle okay? Like
Gatorade is for hydration purposes, Gatorade's not the best.
Okay.
And we're talking strictly hydration, not fueling.
Okay. So let's just talk hydration. So better than plain water.
I don't know. Maybe not. We'll talk about that in a sec. Yeah, okay. That's a good question. As far as just strictly hydration is concerned, and you don't want to spend a fortune. What Stacy Sims actually recommends is she takes like a 16th teaspoon of salt and a tablespoon of maple syrup. And that is her go-to beverage.
That particular concentration of those two things is what's recommended for like a standard water bottle.
And just, it hardly adds any, it just adds a little bit of flavor, and that's just enough to like, to help with the transporting the fluids into, out of the small intestine.
So you can DIY the hydration side.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We can DIY a lot of this stuff we're going to be talking about here.
Okay.
But yeah, one thing to point out, like about just drinking plain water, like if you're exerting yourself for an extended period of time, you're losing a lot of sodium and you drink large volumes of water, your blood can become dangerously low on sodium.
So this is a thing that like overhydration, like you hear the story about the lady who listened to the thing on the radio and went and drank 6 gallons of water and it killed her, right? Yeah. Is that basically what's going on there?
Yeah. And it's called hyponatremia. And that's basically where your blood sodium gets dangerously low.
Right.
It causes too much water to go into your cells and causes them to kind of expand. And this is why, like when you get an IV, it has saline solution in it and not just, you don't just get a pure water IV.
Yeah.
So if you're, you know, these principles become more and more important, like the more extended and that your workouts become, you know, like if you're starting to do like Ironman or marathon or.
So the average Joe out riding Pipeline on a beautiful Sunday afternoon for 60 minutes is fine. Just drink water. You'll be fine. Right. Nike racers, like high performance athletes listening to this, this is a big deal. And if you were going to go do some, you know, like for point to point, this is a, or like white rim in a day, this is a really big deal, right?
Yeah. And like for a Nike racer, for that 60 minute pipeline ride, I think that like a salute, like a really light solution would help you hydrate better. But you know, water in that case isn't bad because you've got other stuff in your stomach it's going to mix with and, you know, but the, you know, a properly mixed solution is going to hydrate you quicker.
So indulge my curiosity here, because I think we've all heard someone say like, oh, well, don't drink soda. That actually dehydrates you. Or like I've heard people say that like alcohol dehydrates you. Is that true?
That's a really good question. I'd say kind of and temporarily for a lot of those. So a lot of, well, first of all, as far as I know, there's only the one main thing that will actually dehydrate you is alcohol.
Okay.
It has a major diuretic effect. It does tend to dehydrate people. There's lots of reasons that if you're not drinking alcohol to not start, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, alcohol actually will dehydrate you. A lot of people say like coffee, tea, caffeine,
a lot of things supposedly dehydrate you.
And those not necessary. No, they don't. And according to Stacy Sims, they don't, at least two. A lot of the really high concentrated sugar beverages will kind of temporarily, because what you're doing is you're taking like a really a high concentrated solution, putting it in your gut. And right. what happens is that's going to draw water from...
Oh, it's going to force. There's a lot of stuff in the solution, so it's going to... A lot of stuff's
going to
fall
out of you.
So water's
going to come from your body into your gut.
To go dilute that.
To dilute it. And what it ends up doing is causing you to be bloated.
Right.
And, you know, and once it kind of like dilutes and it becomes equal to the water outside of your gut, then your body will kind of process. So
temporarily.
So it
yes.
kind of temporarily dehydrates you. A lot of times like soda and coffee and stuff can cause you to pee a lot. And a lot of that's just because people drink a lot of it.
Right.
And when your body senses you drinking a lot of something, it kind of senses excess. And so it'll cause you to create urine.
Right.
You know, same with like just drinking too much plain water. If you drink right. too much just plain water, your body's going to sense that there's an excess. It's going to create urine and, you know, you're just going to pee a lot.
But on that, if you're stranded on a desert island in a crate, you've got a crate of Coke, that's going to keep you alive.
Yeah.
Water-wise. Alcohol might not, though.
Yeah, alcohol wouldn't.
Alcohol, really? So if I was on a desert island and I had a crate of vodka with me, like pure alcohol, basically, right? With like, where there's still a lot of water in it, right? That's like, it's a liquid, right? I'm eventually going to die of thirst with bottles of vodka all around me.
I don't know exactly, but from what I understand...
Kinda,
yeah.
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 Okay.
It's very dehydrating.
So either way, skip on the Feed Zone whiskey shot, I guess, for all you Nika guys who are planning on that. But like, if you're out riding, like if you're in the middle of the ride, like a Coke in the middle of the ride is...
It's not ideal.
It's not ideal.
Yeah.
Hydration-wise.
Yeah. Because osmotically, Coke is... a fairly concentrated solution. The Coke would draw water from the rest of your body into your gut temporarily.
Yeah. Not ideal.
Not ideal. Just fine afterwards, but
yeah. So if you're craving that Coke, that make it a post ride Coke, not a during the ride Coke, ideally.
Yeah. Yeah. So understanding the osmotic pressure is really important when you're making hydration judgment calls. And, just as kind of a review, there's three different types of solutions. And when we're talking about osmotic pressure, we're talking in relationship to our blood plasma. Okay. And you've heard of like hypotonic, isotonic, and hypertonic solutions, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So the hypotonic solutions are solutions that are going to have like a lower concentration than our blood. And these solutions are going to flow really, really quickly out of the small intestine into the bloodstream.
Right.
Okay. Isotonic solutions are matched. Like they have the same, like our blood osmolality is like 275.
Cis gels.
Is about the same.
Is what
yeah.
it's coming
so
out.
They're,
okay.
So they're not going to draw blood or water from our body into our gut to process.
It's going to be neutral.
It's just
right.
going to be neutral.
Okay.
Hypertonic solutions are going to be like a good old fashioned gel that comes in the teeny little packet, you know,
yeah, those, like an old hammer gel,
the little hammer. Yeah. They're handy. They're small. They're convenient, but they are going to draw water from your body.
Your body's going to have to go dilute that. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So in any time that you're doing that, it's going to cause bloating because water's coming into your gut. And
like no, water in your gut's bad news, right?
It just kind of sloshes around and
doesn't feel good.
Yeah, it's not where it needs to be. So really for hydration, like you want your solution to be hypotonic. And like Scratch, for instance, I just use Scratch just because I like trust
Scratch
it.
maybe use Scratch here as like a stand-in for just any cycling marketed
yeah.
sports hydration drink.
Yeah.
There's
I just trust
plenty.
I just trust their knowledge behind and
yeah.
it's more knowledge and science than marketing.
Their concept is yeah. solid. It's not like BS.
So, but Scratch is a hypotonic solution. It basically its osmolality is 180,
and we're
blood's 275.
Okay.
Yeah. So you obviously would want to avoid anything that's hypertonic. I don't think any, hopefully
That would be funny.
Yeah, I hope no one's actually trying to market a hypertonic drink as a sports drink.
There's a TikTok dipstick out there who's for sure doing that.
Telling you to drink pure grape juice something.
He's telling you to drink pure grape juice on your trip across this flat earth. For sure. Someone's out there.
But a lot of them are isotonic. A lot of the drink mixes out there are isotonic. And I think there's this feeling that as long as it's isotonic, then you're fine.
Yeah.
But really, as far as hydration goes, you really want the mix to be hypertonic.
So that it goes and tries to...
Hypotonic, sorry.
So that it tries to go and dilute your blood, not the other way around. Yes. Right? That it's introducing more water into your blood, increasing that plasma volume.
It's not hanging out in the gut very long. It's going into the bloodstream where it's actually going to be useful. So
really quick, what would be the worst substance to drink for cycling performance?
Other than alcohol, I don't know. I mean,
pure maple syrup
or something.
Right. Just something insanely concentrated with stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
ocean water.
Yeah. Ocean water.
So that's why you cannot drink ocean water.
Exactly.
Right. Like that's why you can die in an island surrounded by water, because if it's ocean water, there's so much salt.
There's so much water is going to rush into your gut to dilute that.
What a crazy planet we live on. What a cruel God, right? Like, you're surrounded by all this water, but it kills you. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So I guess the whole point I'm trying to get with hydration is less is more. You know, you need at least a little bit, but adding more and more stuff to your water isn't going to hydrate you better.
It's ketchup. Right? Like, a little bit makes it taste better, but like, you know, the amount that like a 4-year-old puts on their hot dog is gross. It makes it worse.
Yeah. And one thing to point out is, like, if you put real food in your stomach, it behaves differently than if you put like a cyst or a gel in your stomach.
Right.
Because those are still considered like solutions.
Right.
Yeah. Osmotically, those have a different pressure that it won't affect it as much as like a
PB&J or something, right?
Yeah, like a PB&J versus a cyst gel is going to behave differently osmotically. So in an ideal world, you're going to like eat real food and drink a very lightly mixed sports drink that just has a little bit of those transporters in it to hydrate you better. So that's kind of the ideal world, not the practical world, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But I just want to read, like, one of the best places to go for information about hydration is Scratch's website. I feel like this is kind of...
We have no connection to Scratch.
Joe's met Alan Lim. That's about it.
Yeah, that's... No, I'll tell you, like, I think, like, Scratch is pretty expensive for what's actually in the bag.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'll criticize Scratch. You could
make something similar.
Here, watch this. I'll show that we're not biased. The high-carb mix, when mixed appropriately, has the consistency of spit, and that's kind of gross. So, like...
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, like, this is not... We genuinely, like... Yeah. We use Scratch here because we like it.
But it has some of the best information about this type of stuff anywhere, Scratch website. So if you want to learn more about it, go there. But I'm going to actually read right from the Scratch website, unless you want to read this. Do you want to read it?
Okay, here we go.
Okay, just read...
What chapter and verse? Okay. Two frequently asked questions that we get are, one, why are sport hydration mixes only 80 calories per 500 milliliter serving? And two, how to get more calories in during long endurance events with our relatively low calorie sports drink? The short answer to the first question is that our sports hydration drink mix is only 80 calories per serving because it is our experience that a 4% carbohydrate solution, 4 grams of carbohydrate per 100 milliliters, is the highest concentration of carbohydrate that we can have in our drink while still optimizing water or fluid transportation across the small intestine.
You guys heard that 4% solution concentration is they feel the maximum.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll get to the science of it all for those who are interested, but for those who aren't, the bottom line is that in practice, when athletes I've worked with used solutions that were concentrated with too much carbohydrate, regardless of the type of carbohydrate, most experienced gut rot, that bloated, sick, less than fresh, I don't want to drink anymore stomach upset, that is a common problem with many sugary sports drinks and gels, a problem that motivated the development of our line of anti-gut rot hydration products. So this is... this is how to sell Scratch 401. This is what I got at Backcountry. This is what you'll get at any bike shop in the world that sells Scratch. Is the first and most tangible thing that you can tell people is that, like, Gatorade kind of makes you feel sick, which I think a lot of people have experienced, even when you were 6 years old playing rec soccer and you had the orange Gatorade out on the field, but right, it doesn't make you feel good. And like, I have this all the time where I ride and it's too hot and I'm stupid and I don't bring enough water and I have to hit a gas station by my home. And I'm always like, Gatorade's a sweet drink. That sounds nice. I'm really thirsty. It's got some electrolytes in it, which pure water doesn't have. I'm going to spend $2 on a Gatorade, right? And it makes me feel worse every time. It's not just Gatorade. It's all the Gatorade adjacent stuff.
Powerade and...
Even like the, what's the one, the coconut water one that everyone loves?
Okay, that's interesting. Coconut water, because is it, coconut water doesn't have a lot of sodium in it.
Yeah.
And when, in your sports drink, like magnesium and potassium and calcium is all bound in our cells.
Yeah.
We don't lose that when we sweat.
Huh, interesting.
We lose sodium. So really, if your sports drink has any of those things, it's just marketing. It's a waste of money.
It's they're banking on you not understanding this.
Yeah. Also, all your sports drink needs is sodium.
Fun fact.
And coconut water doesn't have a lot of sodium. So
yeah, and coconut water also tastes like dolphin tears. It's like the grossest substance known to man. It is actively gross. Like most food things I think people describe as bad or just like not good. Coconut water is gross, and if you drink it, you should rethink your life choices. But that's kind of the pitch with Scratch. Like the easiest, most tangible pitch is just like, it does what Gatorade does without giving you the Gatorade feeling, the kind of sickly, bloated, gross feeling, right? But there's actually a deeper sort of pitch that you kind of have to understand. Like, we've been talking for an hour now about the science behind trying to understand why it does actually work, right? Yeah. Because they're saying there that like, they're basically like, why are you selling me such an impotent drink, right? That only has 80 calories, yeah. Only 4%.
Because I think like a lot of people, like when they're looking at a car, they'll look like what has the biggest engine, what has,
right.
What can go the fastest, what has the most, right. Horsepower, what has, and like if you're comparing Scratch to another drink, you'd think you're getting ripped off because it has the least calories, it has lower carbs, it has less sodium, right. You know, and you're like, well, this other brand has more of all this stuff. Wouldn't, right. It be better?
Oh, there's a heck of a lot more stuff in your Gatorade for sure.
Yeah. Like, and that's, yeah. Not, you know, and again, we're talking hydration right now.
Sure.
That's not ideal. And so I guess we've spent a long time saying that basically, as far as hydration is concerned, less is more. So let's move on to like, how much should you drink during a bike ride? Like I've had people tell me like one water bottle per hour is good, or that, you know, is there a formula that you should follow?
I've heard a lot of people say drink to thirst. When you are thirsty, you should drink. Is that BS?
In my opinion, that's the best way to, you know, that's probably the best rule of thumb.
Okay.
First of all, I think like usually formulas are just kind of too confusing to try, sure. And keep track of how much.
You have a timer going on your Garmin telling you to drink water. Yeah. You've kind of lost the plot, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. As far as hydration goes, it's best to drink when you're thirsty.
Okay. Because thirst is your body. It's like it's a bodily function, thirst, right? And
the thing is though, that you have to be attuned to that for that to work. Mm. Like some people aren't good at listening to their bodies and they probably wouldn't hydrate enough. But if you become attuned to that and like, you would probably hydrate adequately by paying attention to your thirst. Maybe on a longer event, you might have to be a little more conscious about it.
Yeah.
And a little more deliberate about it, like on a really long event. But for most people, that's kind of a good general rule. I would say though, for mountain bike racing, do that combined with whenever you get a good chance.
Yeah, because there's kind of the practical side of our sport where it's like you can't always drink. Sometimes you'll be thirsty and it's not safe for you to, you know, unless you have an extra arm, you know,
yeah,
be grabbing the water. So also throw out, I've seen this before. This is a hilarious thing that children do. I haven't drank any water this whole ride is not a flex. It's not cool. Like to be like, oh, look, I didn't need to drink any water. Like that's dumb. Don't do that. That's like, when kids get the problem, like, ooh, I just got a problem. My suspension was locked the whole time. Like, that's not a flex. You know, you know, the fact that you continue to survive in spite of your bad choices is not something you should brag, you know, be bragging about. But basically, drink to thirst. Maybe, depending on the circumstances, go out of your way to drink a little bit more than you think you need.
Yeah. So now let's switch gears a little and let's talk about, like, we've up till now, we've kind of been talking about more optimal hydration. There's been a huge, like, it like the high carb thing, like with Asker Jukendrup, you know, proving that we can handle up to 120 grams of carbs an hour. You know, it used to be 60, then we started realizing it could be 90. Now people are up to 120, and it just keeps going on and on and on. And so, yeah, so lately, you know, 120 grams of carbs an hour is kind of all the rage. And I hear a lot of even Nike kids thinking they should try to hit 120 grams during a Nike race or something, or, which when you put that into perspective, that's a lot. That's like eating a sis every 10 minutes.
Would you even just practically riding a mountain bike that like eating a gel is a bit of an operation. Yeah. It has like a beginning, middle, and end. It's a story. It's like a journey you go on every single gel, right? Like, I think part of the appeal of like the high carb drink mix is that you don't have to unwrap your water bottle. You know, yeah. It's something you're doing anyway. Like, it's basically removing all the work. And I do think that is one of the practical barriers to people fueling enough, especially for beginners, right? That it's just like, you just don't like do it. And I want to maybe have a distinction here too, that like, I could probably eat 200 grams of carbohydrates in a minute if I just had a bag of sugar and a spoon, right? Like, it's not so much getting that into your body. It's whether or not your body can actually use it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we talked about this a lot last week, you know, how your body is pretty good at utilizing 60 grams of glucose an hour and then
right.
30 grams of fructose. But that fructose is adaptable. Like, you can increase that to another 60 grams if you want.
Right.
But my first point is this necessary and is it smart for everybody? Because we hear all about this, you know, 90 or 100 grams an hour and it's kind of
revolutionized pro racing. It's sort of unlocked this new level of performance where we think that Keegan and Pogacar are probably, you know, fueling a crazy amount, right?
It has for pro racing, but is that like, is this recommendation across the board? Like,
right.
For me, you know, that takes me like 10 hours to do point to point. Should I be doing like 100 grams of carbs an hour for 10 hours while I race point to point?
Quick reminder, because this podcast is American, gram is a measurement of weight. You know, like, you think that like 400 grams is a pound. So think about that 400, like, are you going to eat a pound of carbohydrates? Like, when you start to put it in those, I think it's 435 grams to a pound or something like that. That like it's quite a bit. So I think it's good that we have people like thinking about it and aspiring to get that much carbohydrate in. And I do think you should even kind of know how much you're taking in at an event and try to improve that. Like, again, but, like, just taking, you know,
they kind of make it seem like this is just this number we should shoot for no matter what. I mean,
right.
Like think about like a 120 pound Jenny versus like a 210 pound Jimmy, you know, like, is that number going to be the same for those two riders doing the same event? You know,
right.
And you never hear about that. They're just always throwing out these big numbers that the pros are doing. And my thing is that probably doesn't apply to very many people listening to this podcast. Maybe five.
Okay. Time for ridiculous, unreasonable question that completely ignores complexity. Maybe for the average listener of this podcast, what's a good number to shoot for?
Okay. And that's the thing. It's got to be scaled. And I learned a really cool way to scale it. And this is really, really cool. I'm super excited about this. But you're familiar with kilojoules, right?
Mm.
Okay. Kilojoules is something that your power meter can measure.
It's like a measure of total work done, right?
Yeah. It's basically a measure of like your wattage over a period of time.
The energy you created.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, and right?
Interestingly enough, kilojoules they're different than calories, but for some reason, one kilojoule equals one calorie. And that's just a total coincidence.
Science is crazy, huh?
Yeah, and you know what? And they're totally different things. They're measuring totally different things.
Weird.
One's measuring boiling water and the other's measuring power on a, you know, but one kilojoule equals one calorie. So I think it's almost easier to kind of think of things in terms of calories. And in fact, it's, you know, we haven't really talked much about TSS on this podcast because I don't use it as much as I used to, but you know, TSS is a good way of measuring how much work was done during a particular workout. And I think kilojoules or calories is almost just as good of a metric for how much work was done during a given period of time.
Interesting, because I kind of do that subconsciously where that's kind of a metric I look at every day because I think it's interesting. Like, oh, I burned 800 calories on this ride, or holy smokes, I burned 3,000 calories on this ride. You know, yeah. Like...
That is actually, if you do it at high intensity, you're going to get to that number faster than if you, yeah.
Right.
So it really is a pretty good indicator of how much work was done over a certain amount of time.
So when my Garmin at the end of the ride says 1,900 calories burned over the course of that ride, you could say that was a 1900 kilojoule ride. That's like a mathematical truth. It always is the same.
And it's because of our inefficiencies as humans that number happens to work out. So it just kind of makes it easy that you don't really have to do a conversion there, because I think it's easier for most of us to think in terms of calories. But so you can use kilojoules or calories to indicate or to estimate your fueling needs. And I'm ripping this off from Coach Adam Pulford, who coached Alex Grant. And he introduced this concept that he teaches his athletes. And I thought it was just brilliant, but basically, it's a formula where, and Alan Lim has even said this, you know, when you're doing a long endurance effort, you should shoot to replace about half of the calories that you're, you know, so.
Okay.
And so there's, and then once you figure out what half of the calories are, you can divide that by four, and that gives you about how many grams of carbohydrates you should shoot for each hour. So it's this cool little formula that can kind of let you know about what you should be shooting for. You know, so for instance, you know, on the ride we did to Francis Peak the other day, I did 627 calories per hour, or you could say kilojoules an hour, but I did 627 calories per hour, and I divide that by two, I should shoot to replace 313 calories during that ride. If I divide that by four, that figures out to about 80 carbohydrates an hour.
80 grams of carbohydrates?
80 grams.
Or 80 different carbohydrates an hour.
80 grams of carbohydrates an hour. Which is, I thought
that's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
And so, but then another rider who I looked at their Strava, saw how many calories they burned. This rider is a lot smaller than me. They burned 448 calories an hour. Divide that by two, that's 224. Divide that by four. This rider needed 56 calories or 56 grams of carbs per hour for.
Now this makes sense because it takes more energy to get your body up that hill than the smaller riders.
Yeah.
So this is intuitive.
Yeah. So this rider needed 56. I needed 78.
And assuming here that you guys rode together, right? That you did this at the same
interesting,
pace.
Interesting. This rider actually got up to the top about 15 minutes faster than I did.
Wow.
On less carbohydrates.
Interesting. And this is why smaller riders like body types matter in professional cycling, right? That the Yates brothers are different from Fabio Jakobsen, right?
Okay. But so like a pro level rider, which I am definitely not.
Newsflash.
they can utilize about, we'll say 800 calories an hour.
Okay.
Divide that by two, that's 400. Divide that by four. That's about 100 grams of carbs per hour. So using this little formula is a really good way to kind of estimate how many grams. And I would say this estimation puts you on the high end of things. Definitely.
For those really excited riders listening to this who have already kind of heard the buzz about, oh, this guy's doing 120 an hour, like 100 grams of carbohydrates an hour is a ton. Right. Like that's a crazy amount. Like that's very much like, we're not saying like, oh, if you're not doing this, what are you doing? Right.
Well, and the thing is that during like a race, an endurance race type situation that they're using this much. Like if these guys go on like a 4-hour endurance ride with their friends in zone two, they're not going to be consuming 100 grams an hour, you know? they're going to be consuming far less. And so, but I think a lot of people are hearing about these high carbohydrate intakes that, that people are doing, and they're doing it on like every ride they go on, they're bringing this high carb drink mix or something, or they're trying to get that many, and you know, it's probably more than is necessary or maybe even healthy, you know, like we're basically hearing what professional athletes do who have highly tuned guts and the ability to produce a lot of kilojoules. And they're doing this in a race type situation where they're prioritizing performance over health, you know? So long story short, don't try to get 100 grams of calories on a Nike ride.
And also just in general, like I do think that like the GCNification of cycling is a good thing on net, but like, I don't think knowing about what the pros do is always good for the public, because like, you're not a pro. The fact that a pro does something doesn't mean that it's a good thing for you to do. Like, when the pros start wearing aero helmets, I pay attention. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Like, looking at the way that they train and the way that they eat is not necessarily like stuff that you should implement. Even their like equipment and like maybe bike fit choices, like a lot of the pros are discovering it's really is the fastest to ride a 36 centimeter bar. I don't tell many people a contender they need a 36 centimeter bar, right? So like the fact that the pros don't do it doesn't mean that you should. That's yeah.
So my point is the amount of fuel you should consume should scale with the type of effort, the duration, you know, like longer, like, you know, like a longer event is going to, it's going to be a bigger deal. And how many kilojoules or calories you're using per hour, and you've got to scale it accordingly. You know, and when we're talking about these, like these high carb sports drinks, like more isn't necessarily better. Like, you know, you and I today, we could go online and we could buy every ingredient we needed to start our own sports drink company, you know, and we could like, we could do a solution, you know, scratch is only 4%. We could do like a 15% solution, or, you know, like, they only have sodium. We could do like sodium, magnesium,
uranium,
potassium, uranium, calcium, you know, we could add caffeine to it. We could do all this stuff to it, but doesn't necessarily make it better. You know, it's gotta be scaled towards the effort that we're doing. So, when you eat real food, it kind of creates like a bolus in your stomach that your body slowly pulls carbohydrates from that and kind of distributes the fueling kind of slowly and gradually throughout, you know, throughout the ride. So ideally, like, real food and proper hydration is preferable, you know, and I would recommend that, like, on a fun ride through Park City that takes 8 hours or 6 hours, or, you know, I recommend that on something that's more recreational, but sometimes that's just not practical, right?
Yeah. Like, can't be eating a sandwich in the middle of a race always, right?
Yeah. You know, so like a pro, that pro we talked about earlier, that's going to need like 400 calories to replace 400 calories per hour that needs the 100 grams of carbs. They could do that with just one bottle of like the Scratch High Carb.
Yep.
Or a similar product, you know, rather than taking like 4 sisses or something, you know, they could just do that in one bottle. It's convenient. It's easy when they're racing. It's hard to it's hard to open packages and so forth. You just grab your bottle, drink, you're getting hydration, you're getting fueling, albeit it's not optimal hydration, and the type of fueling that you're getting takes practice to be able to tolerate, you know, it's really not for everyone. But in some circumstances, that makes a lot of sense. You know, like Xander doing marathon nationals, I think that would be a great fueling choice for him. Xander out on a fun 2-hour ride with friends, that would be a terrible fueling choice. You know, there's better things for that type of riding. But when performance over a long period of time is a higher priority than hydration, it's a great option. So basically, to kind of wrap things up here on the high carb drinks, under 90 minutes, if your event's under 90 minutes, again, you need to prioritize your coming to the event loaded. And then hydration. Those two things are the most important on shorter races, which is kind of what most of us do. If the event's over 2 or 3 hours and you are an elite enough athlete that you can utilize that many, you use that many kilojoules in an hour, these high carb sport drinks are a great option. But again, I think these are only really an option for a few of our athletes, and it's not for me. I don't do that many enough kilojoules an hour to really require that kind of fueling, you know. Another thought too is like, you know, maybe if people have a hard time either through, you know, either because of they lack the skill or it's difficult for them, drinking their carbs during a race might be better than them trying to eat just because it's easier.
Right.
My only thing is that you wouldn't really need a high carb mix to do that, because usually people in that category would benefit more from 60 grams of glucose rather than the fructose mixes that allow them to achieve those higher amounts of carbohydrates. But ultimately it's going to be whatever works for you. You know, the high carb drink mixes are a great option for some people.
It's a tool in the toolbox.
Yeah.
Hammers are great tools. They're not for everything.
Yeah. So, So just to review the hydration principles, you know, again, show up to your events topped off with, have those glycogen stores in tip top shape. As far as hydration goes, more stuff in your hydration drink is not better. You know, usually a 4% solution with maybe 20 or 30 grams of carbs is kind of ideal. Your sports drink really only needs sodium. If they're putting other electrolytes in it, it's just a marketing thing for people that don't know better. And just remember to drink to thirst. And boy, how long are we? Whoa, this is super long.
I know, right?
I am so sorry, everybody.
Nah, it's fine. I mean, if you're here at this point, like, you don't get an apology. This is your choice has brought you here too. But like a lot of other things, this is something you should be conscious of first and foremost, right? That, like, I think very few of us think about drinking water in our daily life, because it's like our body's third most basic function, probably. You know, like the one thing we have to do to stay alive is breathe air and then drink water, right? So I think really just having an approach to this where you understand how, like I tell people, you should understand how your bike works. You should understand how your car works. You should understand how the company that you work for works, right? In the same way, I think you should understand how your body works. And this is actually really good for me, because I didn't know any of this, which is embarrassing because I've been doing this long enough that I definitely should have. So
I think we definitely need a secret word today, because I really doubt I'll get anyone.
What was that word you made up in the middle? It was like, it was F something.
How about just KJ?
K
for what? Kilojoules.
Oh, that's not exciting. I was thinking more like
Lemon Lime.
Mad Thirsty or something. Like,
now we're confusing. We give them like five different words for these.
Any one of those words is acceptable. It's
Mad Thirsty.
Mad Thirsty.
Mad Thirsty is
your secret phrase. Yeah. Okay. Well, everybody, it's funny. I'm sitting here. I'm so thirsty.
I know.
Right now.
I'm dying of thirst.
I had like a Diet Coke before this, and I haven't had water for like 3 hours, and I've been talking for an hour and a half.
I know. And all that water from your body's rushed into the Diet Coke to dilute it.
Yeah, I know. Right. Look at me not optimally hydrating for this podcast. Well, everybody, make sure to pay attention to this. Everyone ride safe this week. Take advantage of the slightly cooler temperatures next couple of days. Get out there. Be safe. We'll talk to you guys next week. Let's go get some water.